Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
Hello, Galway! We've got a very excited crowd in here tonight because they think they're on the verge of ending their own famine, but obviously Waterford's famine is much longer, so, you know, maybe he who needs it most gets the rewards. What? It's Mayo's year, is that what you're saying? Mayo got a much bigger boo than I expected a little bit earlier on, so I thought maybe the whole of Connacht would be all together and you'd be trying to get each other over the line, but it turns out when my neighbour is successful, you know, I'm diminished somehow. That's the attitude, right? Yeah, okay. 53106, the text number here. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet the show, add off the ball. If you've got any questions for the lads from earlier on, they're all going to be back up to help us preview the actual match itself in the next part of the show. And just to remind you all this week, with thanks to Borgosh Energy, we've been giving away great prizes ahead of the All-Ireland Final. Tonight is absolutely no difference. In fact, it may well be our best prize of the week. One lucky person in the room is going to walk away with an overnight trip for two to the All-Ireland Final. The prize includes tickets to the Borgosh Energy GAA Legends Tour with Ollie Canning on Saturday the 2nd of September, overnight hotel accommodation in Dublin, and you also get to join us for an exclusive match preview in the Players' Lounge on the day. But most importantly, you get two tickets to the All-Ireland Hurling Final. Yeah, you can chat. You're very giddy. I understand. We're like nearly there in terms of the actual match itself. But to put that game in some context and to talk about how long it's been and just how amazing the group who last won an All-Ireland for Galway. Please welcome three legends of Galway hurling. It's Pete Finnerty, Cyril Farrell and Anthony Cunningham. Good evening, Pete. How are you doing?
Good there.
Cyril, thanks for coming. How are you? Anthony, how's it going? How are you?
Lots to you.
Pete, you're wearing blue.
Yeah. Well, I've all my maroon washed and I've to use it all next week celebrating, so I thought I'd wear this.
Forward planning.
Yeah, forward planning, yeah. Good at that in our day.
We never planned at all.
No. Cyril, I was just looking back at some of the videos. You were a kid when you were taken over the very first time to manage the Galway Senior
Hurlers. I'm still a kid, Ger. It just probably happened more than anything else. This guy won a minors in 83, Pete won under 21 in 83. I had a few of the older lads around, and it was a matter of gelling the minors and under 21s together, and it took a while, but eventually they came good, like, and we were thereabouts for a few years. And we had great, one of someone lost a lot as well, but we had great times through the good and bad, like, you know.
But the first time you took it was 78, 79, around then. Yeah. You're still in your 20s.
Yeah, well, as far as I...
He's in college with a lot of them, sure. Yeah. He was in college for years.
You were probably still playing, right?
He did about 15 years at UCG at the time. He did about 15 years at UCG at the top of the stairs. Never learned.
They finally gave me the degree to get rid of it.
He got Joe McDonough, God be good to him, and a few of the boys going to do the exam, sir.
The best degree I got in college, Ger, was a degree with these guys of psychology. Because whether you got one or not, you became a psychologist these days around, I tell you that, because we had a funny bunch. I suppose we're just talking outside. Maybe you wouldn't get away with it nowadays, but like when we'd win a match or lose a match on the bus, we'd have a nice bus, the whole lot, climb on, and we'd have everything on the bus going home. Within reason, anything the lads wanted, they got.
So the Dallas Cowboys, 1995.
It was just three women like
there's different times, like, you know.
And remember, the girlfriend was behind us.
There was a few incidents. There was a couple of girlfriends that a few of the boys had. Ian O'Ryan and a few of the boys. Oh, yeah. Used to be consternation. And Farrell would have to sort it out. Like, so it's good crack.
On the 1980 squad, I had a pair of twins called Pascal and John Ryan. Some of you might know of them there. One of them passed away, but they're brothers of Vienna. Brilliant hurlers, like, brilliant. But could never fully, won under 21 and had them on the panel, could never fully get them right, but they were very good with the girls, like, and, you know, Sylvie Lenam would know by the way they're dressed at training. If they had white socks on after training, look out. He'd say, what's on tonight, boys? And their favourite stunt was, they might swap. You know, so no one would know the difference, and being a betting man, I was saying, you know, maybe we'd have a bet and see who'd get caught, but they never got caught, like.
Is this going up in Glen Ridley?
And all over the rest of the country.
Times.
But how did you deal with the fact that you were so much younger than normal managers?
Well,
at
I was
that
younger
stage.
Than some of the players. Like, yeah, I suppose the biggest problem in 1980 that I had, not a problem, but the biggest thing I had to change was the mindset. You had the hurlers, the John Connollys, the Sean Silks, you know, these lads were strong, Joe Connolly, Frank Buck, physical hurlers, Noel Lane coming on the scene, Bernie Ford. But to change the mindset. They knew they were good, but they never fully believed that they could win. You know
Grant,
what I mean?
So I understand that you say that, right? You walk into the bunch and you go, listen, lads, we're going to win All-Ireland, and they look at you and go, ah, feck off, sure, you never won anything.
Yeah, it's very true.
So how do you fix that?
Well, in October, November 1979, brought them into Athenry. The boys had known here in the old dressing rooms, galvanising the, you know, and brought them around, had a bit of training, and I told John I was going to pick on him first, because he was a kind of the golden boy, and I was kind of tackling him hard. I said, if you can't train, you can't play. When I had to do my training, that's it. And I promised them, I chaired the meeting, since I sat on the table, made each lad speak. I never forget it, PJ, when I was in the corner, he'd all speak his own corner. At the very end, he hopped up and he caught me. And I wasn't expecting him, he lifted me up. He said, are you telling me, he said, that if we do what you say, we'll win the All-Ireland? Of course, it was easy for me to say it. I said, I'll tell you, we'll be the fittest team in the country, we'll be the strongest, and we will win. He dropped me down, and the meeting was over. So, we played a league game or two before Christmas. That time we'd been missing a lot of players, the club game, things beyond. But the first training session we had was on the 6th of January. It was a holy day that time. And I had contacts in UCG. It was just after leaving it. And we played UCG in Carnmore. The groundsman's told, on the quiet, we'll be training hard, no physical game, very wet and muck. I said, I don't want any hot water on afterwards. He said, what? I said, you have no hot and you'll be gone. So I called my lads back after UCG went away, and we did training in the muck. I did training that wouldn't be considered training. Now we did a lot of rest, the whole lot, carrying. I had a muck to the gills, into the dressing rooms. I was in the tracksuit, I was gone. We're training again Tuesday night, and I could hear the boys saying, that little baldy effer, where is he? I was trying to say to them, this year it's going to be different, the training will be different, and it'll be, I'm going to make you, I'll break you first and then make you. And that was the first session, and I don't know whether they enjoyed it or not, but the point was like, there was no tea, there was no sandwich, and there was no hot water. They had cold water, and I had them so much covered in muck, you see, that they had to have the shower, they couldn't get into the cars. So, that was the start of 1980.
You'd have to say he was ahead of his time. I know, in fairness, when we joined, I think we for the whole summer, we probably trained 5 out of 7 nights, and... Yeah. You know, we just do ball work tonight, and the following night will be a very physical training session, and the third night might be a match. And, you know, you mightn't train for very long, but his mentality was you have to collectively train, get them all in together, and work hard as a unit for the whole summer.
And yet, like, so Jerry McInerney was basically living in America for large portions. Were you as well?
Yeah but you're... Yeah. this fella, Pete and Jerry McInerney, were the first two professional hurlers ever.
I didn't declare that to the referee.
But we bring them home.
Statute of limitations.
We had them home for the 4 months, and we paid them their wages they were getting in America, and no tax taken over. So in actual fact, they were tied to me in a sense. They were professional hurlers, but we had to have them because I knew
they brought them home in the summer.
Yeah.
So America in the winter, and then summertime you're like, all right, lads, come back over and we'll look after you.
Yeah, that was well.
And McInerney arrived home with his white boots.
Yeah.
And if you think. Now everybody wears white boots, or, I mean, Tommy, why should you wear orange ones, or someone else wear yellow ones?
McInerney was doing an interview for a job.
Yeah. The white, like, you in 1988, to turn up in Ireland with a pair of baseball boots they were at the time, white boots, and to wear those, and I mean, just, he didn't, you know, he was the king, and he didn't give a hoot. Just like someone, you know, dyeing their hair blonde now, and...
He was doing an interview for a job, and the interview was in Sligo, right? So we got his hair kind of cut, still his long hair. We got him into IC Centre here in Galway and kind of tuned him up and the whole lot. Got on up to Sligo and we knew one or two on the board and we kind of figured, well, we'd have the job well got, which he got. But during the course of the interview, one of the interviewees looked down and McInerney had no socks. And he said to him, Jerry, how come you're not wearing socks? Well, he said, I'm only had to come back from New York. He said, it was very warm out there.
Everyone wears
he got the job.
Socks now, yeah.
A man ahead of his time as well. No socks. When was the very first time that you remember meeting Tony Keady? What was the first kind of interaction you had where you go, okay.
The first, look, he was a brilliant hurler underage. A lot of us done in the forwards, all right? UCG were playing a game against Galway in the stadium. I wasn't over the team though, but I knew it was on, I went to see it. And there was two guys I liked that were different. Keady was one, and a lad by the name of John Lee was the other. And John Lee was a UCG student, but he was from Clare, you see. This is the trouble, and I found out, Johnny Lee, yeah. Good fella from Tubber. He wasn't going to transfer from Tubber, but like, he was with UC playing well. But Keady played half that game centre-back, and I said to myself, if ever I was over, you know, if ever it happened again, there's a future centre-back. So what happened then when I came in, Sean Silk, Lord of Mercy, Joe McDonough, Iggy Clark, they were the half-back line. So they brought in Keady, he was brought in more as a forward. I remember the first night I was picking him, on a Tuesday I would pick the team, and I said, I better tell him he's on, because, you know, he wouldn't give a fiddler's like. But I went over to him, we were playing Offaly in Bor, and I went across to him for the team. That time the team we announced on the Tuesday night, and I said, Tony, you're playing next Sunday. Great, 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 he said. And I said, you're playing centre back. And he looked at me, he said, you're mad. And I said to him, look, I said, they say you're mad as well. So I said, there's two of us in it, don't worry. But he went in centre back against Offaly. In that time now, Bor, a nice, tight venue, and Offaly were always very welcoming to us that day. They'd redden us before they go out, and they'd redden us during the match, and they'd redden us after the match. But it was a great introduction. And he was there then until, you know, he kind of made it his own. But he was a brilliant hurler.
You knew from that first game that he was a special talent.
Yeah, he just had a special talent. But like, the boys would tell you, you'd have to know him to get the best of him. He was a bit different, like, off the pitch. Like, you know, a lot of these, like the Tommy Welch's, this word, and Tim McGrath, and Ollie Cannon, they're all different off the pitch. Like, you know, you have to get to know them. But Keady was different in his own way. He was innocent in his own way. Never, like, he was like a kid, never grew up. Like, as I said, like, Margaret raised four of them, but she raised five, because Pete will tell you, sure, the biggest kid was Keady himself. Like, you know, so like, that's the kind he was. But he was actually very talented, gifted, without kind of killing himself, you know.
Yeah, yeah. What's your first memory of him?
First memories, he played with the vocational schools, the county vocational school.
Yeah,
Peter would play as well.
Was that forwards or backs?
He played centre forward, and in 1981, he was 17. I was 16, and I joined the minor panel. And we beat Clare in the All-Ireland minor semi-final. Kilkenny beat us in the final, and Tony was centre forward. And that was 81.
Where was Peter in that game?
Wing back, or full back. Full back, yeah. 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 He was a bit slowed in as well. And, he was, Pete broke his leg as well. You had a bad break. In what year did you break?
Oh, that was 81.
81, yeah. He was out for a good while and then came back in, which was a tower at centre back. But Tony then reverted in later years, or in a couple of years after that, to centre back. But 82, we were in the minor final again.
Where to,
Tipperary beat us in the final, and then 83 Surrey came in.
Did we score in the second half in that game?
Tip.
Against Tip?
Yeah.
Did we? Didn't score much. And you were up there.
Well, you were full forward, yeah.
Full back. I was still full back for me, since.
I was wondering where the dig was there. I couldn't quite work it out. You were in the forwards, obviously. That's it. Yeah. Fair. What's yours? When do you first kind of remember?
First time I remember Tony was inside the stadium here. The Connacht Tribune put up a set of bikes for the winners of this tournament. It was a Connacht tournament.
Was that under 14?
Under 14, yeah. And my club, Molya, we got to the final, and Kilmer Daly got to the final. And it was an October day. And Pierce Stadium was like a bog, and they won the bikes. And I remember him cycling off, and I looking at him and the big pompous head in him. And Noel Earls was cycling, but the wheel was going down through the ground. He was a big guy, Noel. You know, and one of our lads ran over, and he made bits of the mug guard.
Mullia wouldn't do that.
So that was the first time I met him. But there's a great story about when he played first time for Kilmer Daly, senior. He went into the dressing room, and he'd be only 16 or 17. And Michael Earls, who played with Galway and is part of our team in 87, 88, Michael was like a werewolf when he talked out. He was here, everyone, his back and his arms, his everything. So the next thing.
Except he said.
Yeah.
sorry, Mike.
You're not supposed to say that.
Well, the next thing, one of the guys said, young Katie. When you have hair on your chest, like Earl, he says, that's when you'll be able to play senior hurler. Keady thought for a second, he says, no. No matter how long you wait, no matter what you do, you will not put hair on steel.
Thank you.
Yeah, so that's when I got to know him, and then we played minor together, played under 21 together. He started centre back.
You came together.
Yeah. I know Tony for 40 years. He's a great guy, you know.
But so, do you remember the first time you played right half back, centre back, and?
That would have been in the All Ireland under 21.
Right.
Yeah. We played. I played number 5. You played number 6. We beat Tipperary in the final.
1983.
Yeah.
Right.
Like Nicholas English was centre back for Tipperary. Yeah. It was one of the things that Nicholas left out of his book. He never mentioned it.
Centre forward, must have been.
Well, yeah,
centre back. Was it centre back or centre forward, Dickie was?
Centre back.
Centre back. He played centre back all these years for UCC.
Yeah.
Right. All the Fitzgibbon matches, yeah. English was centre back.
Maybe somebody needs to go back and tap the manager on the shoulder and go, you got one of the best forwards of all time there.
No, good horror competitor.
He's very good at centre back as well.
I remember going on an all star trip to my cost, and we were playing, I think it was Offaly or someone, and that time it was 13 a side in America, and a lot of the lads travelled as all-stars but were injured. And it was over the team. We made one rule getting off the plane, turn up for the match. That's all. There was no training. So we met for the match anyway, and I was short. And Fox had travelled as a sub all-star corner back. And I said, lads, anyone here in the dressing room that has travelled that can play in the forwards? And Fox, he said, I'm able to play in the forwards. I played him corner in the full forward line. He got about 8 goals in 2 games, and did I regret it?
Because Pat Fox turned him into a forward.
Because he came back to him with tip, and he turned him into this for the rest of our lives. That was all safe. True story.
Fionnuala and Mairead Glynn in the audience have texted in to say, our dad Jerry Glynn was on the 1980 panel, and on the way to Dublin to the final, our mam asked, would Galway win? He said, we'll break down brick walls for Cyril Farrell. Definitely changed the mindset. Up Galway. What has the mood been like around the town? Because obviously, and the county, it's clearly overshadowed by the passing of Tony Keady and a legend. And I guess everybody came together and there was this outpouring of emotion and support for the family. And then the team has to kind of somehow do proper deference to his memory, and they also need to feed off a little bit of the inspiration. So it's a very difficult thing.
I'd say the first thing, Jerry, is that his funeral, it was very moving. Now, we'd have known him well. And he was known all over Ireland and Galway and that. But the younger players, say the lads on the team now, I'd say it was the first time ever they realised what they could be, if you know what I mean. He was a fella that hardly ever left Galway. You know, very unassuming. And thousands turned out to his funeral. And I suppose a bigger tribute at the funeral, even I knew some of the tip lads had come. But the whole lot of them came dressed in the same attire. The lads that we in our time were trying to kill, and they trying to kill us. You know what I mean? And to the players looking on, you know, if I think they can draw great inspiration from it, and not they're courageous enough, but just to inspire them to do that extra bit, because like here was a guy that played at the top level. These are fellas that playing at the top level as well, and the only thing that these fellas haven't won, they've been around it, they've been around the top table, but they haven't won the All Ireland. And if you win an All Ireland, it isn't that it makes them different, but it does put them on a different plane. Like they have it won, so therefore, whatever they achieve afterwards, this one is the one for these fellas. And like even seeing the Galway players, which you'd expect to see there, but seeing players from all over the country paying tribute to Tony coming back, lads that have won every honour, and then to see all the tip lads one after another coming marching out from the church, like you'd kind of say to yourself, like this game of hurling we have. It's bigger than a game, it's a big family, and while you're trying to win, and you're going to try to win on the pitch, and you do everything to win, when all is said and done, you know, it's still only a game, but it makes you kind of feel what I think what these fellas can do. And I even said to one of them today, I don't want to say what's down to, I said, you'll have a 16 men on Sunday, I feel. Joe McDonough's not gone ahead, but Tony will be very close to this team, because he would have coached some of these as they're under 21. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they found him a breath of fresh air, because he wasn't the usual type of coach. Like he was different.
Yeah. I mean, there's loads to play for clubs and for counties that sort of go away from it. But Tony, the years I was there, Tony was a train every evening. And he'd have his kids there, and he'd wait at the gate until we'd be coming off the pitch, and we'd be the last off. And they were so mannerly, they just wanted to show you their new tricks. And Tony says, what do you think of him? Anthony make a great forward there. he just absolutely adored the kids. And
immersing them in the culture.
For a dad to bring, I would say in May when there'd be nobody training, obviously when you go on into July and August and train at that time is open, you'd always have them there.
And you'd assume that the players are kind of not paying any attention to it, because you wouldn't. You're 19 to 23, 24, your whole life is ahead of you, don't think that much about it. But then when something like this happens, you suddenly realize and look around and start to smell things and go, okay, this is different.
Yeah, but all these players know him and knew him very well and knew who he was and, a lot wouldn't have seen him play, but would have seen him with the under-21, with the clubs. He was, and he was such a charismatic character, they'd feed off him,
Yeah, Pete, they can't be burdened by it either, though, because this is their story and they have to just play their own game. So it's difficult enough.
In fairness, and I'd say every one of us were conscious of not to put that burden on them. When they go out on Sunday, they have to hurdle force for themselves, and then then you can help somebody. When you get level with your man or when you're beating him, you can help the fella beside him, you can help the team, you can work as a unit. You do it for your jersey, you do it for your county, you do it for that force. When we win the All-Ireland, it's going to be a huge boost. It'll be... Don't fire that glass at me now, Ken McGrath, or it'll start. But you have to do it first for that, and then anything after that is a bonus. But we can't say talking about Tony all night, but it was very sober here in Galway. The match has helped, it has lifted it, but they're two separate things. But the biggest compliment I could give Tony was he was a fantastic hurler, but he was a better father. And you could see those qualities in his family the day of the funeral. Shannon got up there at 16 years of age and she gave a speech she had written herself about her father. And you see the likes of Conor Hayes and tears in his eyes, grown men, and was absolutely in. And Tinny got up then and he read the hurler's prayer, So you can see the quality is in the children as well, and he puts them into it, yeah. But he'll be sadly missed, and hopefully he will be the 16th man on Sunday.
That's pretty remarkable, all right. Let's talk a little bit more about the successes you had and some of the stuff that you're responsible for. Cyril, you are credited or discredited in certain counties with inventing tactics in hurling. And I think it would have been playing Anthony as a third midfielder.
Yeah, it's funny. The first kind of success we had in my career, say, was 1983 with a minor team. This fellow here was captain of it. And it was a very strong breeze, very strong. And the dressing room was at them, were in the Cusick stand side, and they were doing up the dressing rooms. He probably doesn't remember it, but going up for the toss, I said, I would always play with the breeze, all right? Very strong breeze. So we took the breeze, and we were 4 points up at halftime, which wasn't much, but we were four up. And going into the dressing rooms, the Dublin team had to come through our dressing room to go to theirs, just kind of go through it. And Kevin Heffernan was with them, all right? And we had a lot of selectors, and I think we had three or four priests. But us. So you couldn't go wrong. But coming in anyway.
That's twice a day.
Coming in, they were saying, who decided to take the breeze? And I had a very good friend of mine. I still have a fella from in our club now, Tommy Larkins, called Michael Fogarty, who won a lot of club championships with Turles, the Turles Sarsons man, Tipman. And I brought him into the selectors, into the showers, and I put them in there. And I said to Mick, I closed the door. I said, lie against that door. No one coming out until I'm finished. So G'd up the lads and hit the pitch, and then he let them out, you know what I mean? So we actually won the match. So when we won the match, of course, it was perfect. The breeze was no problem. But there was a storm that day. And this fella here was captain of the team. Jerry Mack was wing-back, and Pat Malone was centre-field, and Joe Cooney was everywhere. We had a lot of, you know what I mean?
That's a good team.
And at the same time, Pete's team in Below and Tullamore were in an under-21 the following Sunday or two. So, the whole thing was kind of, now that doesn't mean you're going to win, but the whole thing was starting to come together. But when you win, there's a terrible difference there between winning and losing. And at that level, even at minor level, but at senior level, the boys will tell you, the winner takes it all. So when you win, you're a genius. When you lose, you're shot.
And now, at this remove, when did you decide that actually playing the way that traditional teams play with three in the full back line, three in the half back line, and two, and as everybody has grown up with it. When did you think, actually, you know what, maybe there's something different?
It was Kilkenny that taught us to think that way. See, in 85, in 84, we were hammered in Turles, well beaten. And we had to change the team around. And in 85, got together, and Brahin all kind of new lads and kept a few older lads. And we got beaten in the 85 All-Ireland. I think we got in there kind of unknown to ourselves, really. But in 86, we contested every final, Gerard. That would be, the Railway Cup in the guise of Connacht. The Rochtas, the League, and the All-Ireland. We were beaten every one of them. But Kilkenny were kind of the dominant team at the time, and couldn't get on top of them. And I never forget 86, like, or, you know, coming around, 85, 86, we said we'd have to try something different against them. So we had an idea, we'd play three midfielders. We put a marker on Ger Finlay, who was doing a lot of work, a marker, now, just to mark. This fella was coming out deep. We picked corners, switched to two corners, and played two men inside, Noel Lane and Joe Cooney.
How did you make that decision and why? Where did you get it?
Well, sure, I don't know where, like...
I met you the day or somewhere else.
Was it soccer or was it...
Yeah, it came from soccer, actually.
Yeah.
I was across one year in Arsenal and looked at them in Liverpool, and they had a thing there called five-a-side. You could control, pass, move, three moves, but you couldn't tackle, you couldn't shadow tackle. And every time, if you laid off the ball wrong, there was a guy in the corner exiting you off. There was a £10 note, like, to playing for money. But, like, I tried to build in that we'd use the hand pass as possession, control it, lay it off, and get a return pass.
Yeah.
And we had it worked kind of fairly perfection, but then they took it out of the game and then it worked against us, you know what I mean? But, like, when it worked, it looked lovely. And we did it in the semi-final against Kilkenny. Played Cork, did the same thing, and to this day, I'm very sorry I didn't keep at it. Because the first half wasn't working, but I changed. I shouldn't have changed. The idea was that if you got the ball, you carried it. You didn't put it into the corner where the corner back was. If he followed out, perfect. You laid into that corner where there's no one. But if he didn't follow out, you didn't put it in there. But the pressure in all Ireland final was going in there. And we made Johnny Crowley, I'd say, an all-star in the final.
Yeah.
So that's the
first time I heard that.
Yeah. But Peter Malloy used to question me. Like, the boys in the backs wouldn't question, but Malloy was saying, how is this going to work? See, he was one of the older. You're telling us we're going to play five. We're going to have lads coming in. I said, it'll work if you do what you're... Like, just come in on the... Now, Watford doing much the same thing, holding the ball on the inside, a runner coming through from outside, getting a hand pass, and kind of more or less like football, walking it in.
And were you getting killed by the media for it?
They didn't cop on for a while.
It's sort of slow, like.
But when they did... took a while.
At that day in Turles, it was important to win midfield as well. Turles was a huge pitch.
This is which one? The 86
semi-final. And they were after beating us well in the league.
The league,
10 or 12 points. But it was reversed something like 6-8 weeks later.
Yeah.
But you beat Kilkenny in
the 86 semi.
There's a funny story that day. That's why he said, I think he was ahead of his time. He came out that day and... We were playing three. He wanted to know, does Kilkenny hear about three guys going to be playing at midfield? So he went down to, he went down to the photographer. See when the photographer comes out, he takes. So he went down to this friend of his.
They're not supposed to be telling this.
Ah, go on. And he says to a man, he says, are there any changes on the Kilkenny lineup? He says, no, sure, the lineup's there. He took out the program. No, don't mind that. He said, but did you hear anything down when you were taking the photograph? Are the lineup the same way? So your man was happy then that they hadn't counteracted it, because if they had played, Paddy Prendergast was cornerback that day, and he'd nobody on him. And he ran off the pitch over to the sideline, I suppose, 10 minutes into the match, what'll I do? And this was going on the full back line. And it was a great satisfaction to your man here.
Yeah, but it was more satisfaction, like satisfied, even though I get beaten in the final. But we lost every final in 86. But then basically the same squad in 87 won all the finals that we had, like the four again. And if you asked what we did different, maybe it was one or two different players, but there wasn't anything really different.
We dropped the sweeper system, didn't we?
Yeah, we did, yeah. Well, let's be clear now. Our sweeper system wasn't anyone helping the backs. They were taking care of their own. It was to get in top midfield and to come with runners from midfield. That's what we were doing. Like, you know, now the sweeper is in behind the halfback line in front of the fullback line.
You had ridiculous pace with Martin Nocton and
this fella here. It was pace they had. But that time it suited us because we had to carry the ball and hand pass into the net. Like, you know, we could walk with it. Like the footballers are doing now, walking in and hand passing in.
Yeah.
We had that pace. And like Cooney and Lane and him, like Joe Cooney had unreal skill now. He's only young there. But
there was a lot of pressure on that year. So if you picture it, a lot of people here wouldn't have pictured that or known about it, but we were going to three in a row, three finals that you're going to lose in a row.
Yeah.
And you know, it was just the sheer will to win, I think, that got us over the line. So hopefully for Cobbley on Sunday, after being in two finals, and I think that'll drive them on more than anything else. And
did
it's
you
very similar to our day. And I suppose when we won 87, the thing took off, and you'd be hoping that would happen again.
It seems to be very similar. Like, we lost 85 in 86, and we won the league in 87. These guys have lost two finals and drawn one, and they won the league this year. Okay, they were a bit criticised for celebrating it, but it was the first bit of crystal where they had got together outside of the Bob O'Keefe Cup for the Leinster final. And they seem to have matured better. They seem to be more of a unit. There's a better spine in the team now than there has been before. And if you asked me 4 or 5 years ago, don't you know, could you name 10 of the lads that will start next year, you wouldn't be able. Whereas at the beginning of this year, we were pretty sure you could name 12, 13 of them. You know? So, yeah, and it's a long time ago since we had that, you know, in Galway.
The continuity definitely helps.
It's similar to when we were there.
Yeah, 53106 is the text number. If anybody wants to get in touch with us, by the way, this evening, we're going to be previewing the match in a good bit more detail with everybody in a couple of minutes' time, too. Pardon me. We are here live at Borgosh Energy, proud sponsor of the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship. You can follow all the action this weekend by using the hashtag Hurling to the Core. Some other GAA news tonight, Donegal's Carl Lacey has announced his retirement from intercounty football. So whoever the new Donegal football manager is, he's going to have to do without the services of Carl Lacey. Adam Walsh from Ballyvaughan says, I can't remember what year it was, but I saw Galway play Clare when I was a bit younger, and I saw Pete Finnerty jump up for a ball. He rose amongst a forest of hurlies. He jumped so high he came down with a crow, a huge man and a Galway hurling legend. And lads, Finnerty is the best number 5 I've seen on stage all night. Tommy Walsh is never coming back.
And he hasn't holes in his jeans either. So. Not fairly, not with the times at all.
Not on purpose, anyway. So did you guys get better at being in All-Ireland Finals? We were talking to the lads earlier on about like dealing with the occasion and all that kind of stuff. Is that something you get used to? Is it something you become accustomed to? Because you were in 5 in a row, right?
Yeah, you do. I suppose everybody nearly handles it differently, you know. Some guys will be talking and they'll be joking and they'll be all jovial before. Other guys just withdraw into themselves, you know. Everybody treats it differently. We're all individuals at the end of the day. Conor Hayes would be the one that would be our leading star. He wouldn't say much. Hayes would say very little throughout the year. But as you came to the semi-final, you came to the final, there'd be a few speeches in the dressing room. And once Conor spoke, you know the way you give a round of applause afterwards, there was no applause. He just had you in a place, in a zone, in your mind, don't you know, that you were going to battle on Sunday and it's up to you to get yourself right and do everything possibly not to upset that between now and throw in, yeah.
He was deadly. Conor had a fantastic brain. Tony Keady would be our long-range free-taker. And we're playing tip, it has to be in the final, and he was under pressure, Conor was going in. Nicky English was the golden boy at the time, and Conor was going to be on Nicky, or we figured out he would anyway. So a free came early on in the game, and to be Tony's free. But Conor being captain, he ambled out to the free and, you know, rubbed his. Keely looked back, looked across me, I said nothing. So Conor moved to the free, and Conor took the free and put it over. Perfect. But about 5 to 10 minutes afterwards, the same free came again. But Hayes being Hayes, he figured one is good now, I'm feeling well. He didn't move for the second, wouldn't come for it. So Keely, knowing him, like, you couldn't give out to him, like, because he looked over and was, you know, this is what he did, you know. But then he had to go back and take the free, and he scored it. Like, but he was on Hayes. Like, Hayes is putting actually the pressure on Keady. But, like, you know, it wasn't Hayes' free. But Hayes was figuring, well, if I start off well in Nicky English, like, you know, this will boost me. So yeah. He just took one, got it, and cut his losses then. Like, you know, that's the way he'd be. But even in training with Tony Keady, like, boys wouldn't know this now because they'd be gone in. We'd stay out maybe half an hour, not even, practicing freezing. You'd be on about the stance. He'd be perfect. The rise would be perfect. And the follow through would be perfect. The wrist, everything would be perfect except one thing. He wouldn't score any for me. He dropped them all either short, left, or wide.
In training?
Yeah. I used to make him pick up all the hurling balls. He used to hate it. He tried to frustrate me, you see, but I wouldn't leave him. Out we go again, still score nothing. But when the day had come, as he'd say himself, sure, don't pick up the white flag before I take it at all. That's, yeah, that's the way he'd be like. But he'd, yeah.
He wasn't missing on purpose, it was just that it was training and he didn't really feel the need to.
He was,
you know,
trying to drive me daft. He was missing on purpose. Like, that's the way he'd be, like, you know, he just. natural. It was unreal.
Yeah, he wouldn't appreciate being held 20 minutes
extra. No, that's it.
Why is he going home and I'm out here? Why
what am I
out
doing here this for? Yeah. Like, you know.
But you know, well, I scored them on the day.
I remember Brendan Linsky when he came in first to the panel. Now he'd be a different type altogether. And it used to be, I'd stand in goals in at the time I won. I'd puck out every ball to him to make him catch every ball and hit it. Just catch it and hit it. Now, he'd be good at catching and hitting. He'd be, you know, just to get him that little bit extra. Like, and he'd be saying, what am I coming in early for? Like, you know, but like, he was trying to, whereas Keady, it came very easy to Keady, like, everything came easy to him, you know. I'd say he was playing golf, the golf came easy to him.
Well, he's striking, kind of, you know how guys can strike today, 100 metres, 120 metres, like, at their ease. Like,
yeah.
Joe Canning, Jesus, like, he doesn't even, you know, it comes so natural, he doesn't even put any pressure onto it. And Tony Keady would be the same.
All from his wrist, like.
From his wrist. You know. Tony would be the same. The slither at that time was a bit heavier as well, and the boss of the hurleys weren't as big, but he'd be an Austin Leeson or a Joe striking-wise today. Like, it'd be just so natural.
Cyril, you mentioned there the hand passing stopped. Was it changed, do you think, to stop you guys?
Well, the rule changed that you couldn't score the goals.
Yeah.
See, we would have a lot of actual pace. Like, people, when I took in Martin Octon first, people would say to me, even from his own club, stop him running, he's running too much. But running was his game. Like, the opposition would have to torpedo him. Like, he'd carry it, he'd give a hand pass, he'd get on a return pass. But if you stopped him running, he wouldn't play at all. Like, you had to, you know.
Yeah.
I had him in 3 months training. See, we had no matches, really. We had to come from Athenry from a training ground for the first big semi-final every year. And we'd bring in one or two to make 15 a side. Oh, he was one of the lads that brought in, he used to play in midfield. And he was playing so well one or two, for the about gap of 2 weeks in between the serious matches. Had him in midfield on Steve Mann. I'll never forget it. Mahon one of the evenings, he drew a belt. If he did it now, he'd get 10 red cards. But he meant it. Because Knocko, as we call him, was doing too well on him. Yeah. He meant to do it. And I quizzed him the other night about first time ever, after all these years, and he said, we did meet him, myself and Tony Kilkenny, the lads know who I'm talking about, another good hurler from Kiltorm, well able to clip. They had made their mind up, he's not going to run around us this evening. So they let him have, like, you know. And, like, he was in there kind of, he got for his troubles, he got an All-Ireland ticket and he got a pair of boots for coming in training. Before he came on the panel, we'd often bring in a few guys. We had to try to get right from a training ground. Now, like, they have matches, if you get beaten in the first round, you come back around. But as Pete says, like, the games in our training sessions would be very physical and they'd be flat out. That's the way it was played, because you had to play that way.
It was a miracle that you could go from a league final or earlier in the league and be up to pace in an All-Ireland semi-final against a team coming from Leinster and Munster.
Yeah, well, you see, we'd know who was coming and we'd do blocks of, which was kind of crazy training, I suppose, really, now when you look at it. We'd do blocks of 3 weeks at a time and 2 or 3 days off. The lad, we'd eat in the restaurant in the Mart in Athenry. People here might know where it was. The guy in the restaurant had come down. Now, if there was a match, it was easy for the boys. Now, it was a physical session, they mightn't eat too much. But the night of a match, there'd be a choice of a steak, fish, or chicken. A lorry load of chips or spuds, as much tomato sauce, ketchup, Coke, anything you wanted with it. And going home, be a barrel load of Mahon and these boys, Sylvie and these, I would take club milks and 7-Up. That was the diet that we were on, you know.
And you
don't forget the milk.
You forgot one more ingredient.
What
the smell
that?
Of coffee.
Yeah.
It was the canteen mart in the across the road, and that smell.
You were
of
lucky
coffee.
To get it,
Jesus.
For God's sake.
Couches.
That compared to now, I mean, we were saying it off air actually, that now, the fact that Galway are playing in Leinster, and there's a qualifier round as well, like the likes of Tony and Pete, they'd be. The Austin Leasons and the Joe Cannings of today.
Matches, like.
There'd be, you know, and Tony would have loved that.
Loved it, yeah.
He would have loved playing every Sunday, every second Sunday, and being a nomination for the man of the match or getting it and grieving everybody else. And
not turning up.
And it was just a huge loss, as was to the hurling public of the country, that it didn't see more of him, really.
Yeah.
Because that's the event. It's super now that. There's the Galway play in the first round, second round, third round of Leinster, and there's qualifiers. So every hurler is so well known now compared to, you know, you're turning up
See,
for one match.
Another big difference now is the boys play, even if they don't, in Leinster, get a few games every year. So a fella is getting 3 or 4 games in a year, in the second year he builds up to 7 or 8. In our time, if you got beaten in August, It was the following August, and you mightn't be on the following August, you know what I mean? Yeah. So you didn't build up the kind of you know, the team the way you should, because a good guy could be gone, you know what I mean? That can happen.
You had to get everything right.
You had to get everything right on a given day.
And you weren't flying them home from New York for the league games.
Well, no. The boys knew how to play the system. They knew they had to bring them back for the championship. And the better they were playing, the more they were getting. They were ahead of their time.
Right, lads, I grew up in the 80s and I watched what I consider to be still the best halfback line today in my life in hurling. Finnerty, Keady and McInerney, pure class and wonderful to watch. Broke our hearts in 87 and 88, says Tony from Tipperary. Right, we are going to take one quick break. We're here with Borgosh Energy, proud sponsor of the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship. You can follow all the action this weekend using the hashtag #HurlingToTheCore. It's been amazing spending some time in the company of three Galway legends. And we are going to preview the actual All-Ireland Hurling Final right after these.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.